Welcome back to the Florida Travel Fanatics Podcast. I'm Clark.
I'm Heather.
Welcome to episode 3. This week we're going to share with you the details of a terrific trip we took a couple weeks ago where we left our home in Tampa and drove, or we call it crawled, up the coast of the entire panhandle of Florida and saw some really, really cool things. We'll talk more about that in the main episode. But Heather, how's the price of gas in Florida these days?
Oh my gosh, it's still dropping.
It's 60-something, I think.
It's significantly, for most areas, it's dropped probably almost a dollar a gallon, which makes getting from point A to point B cheaper and just more rewarding.
Yeah. Interesting thing, too. I think the prices in Florida are pretty much the average. Gas prices in Florida are typical of what you would see in, you know, Tennessee, Maryland, whatever. The West Coast states, California, the gas can get crazy expensive. But the prices are pretty average. So if you've got, you know, $3.50 gallon gas where you are, it's probably going to be within 5 or 10 cents of that when you come to Florida. So if you're planning on what your budget is, that's a good guideline.
Right. And when you think about it, our state, the peninsula part of our state, is about 3 hours across. So when gas drops a dollar a gallon, that's a bonus.
Having fun places. And saving money.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
Speaking of having fun in Miami Beach.
Yeah, Miami Beach residents voted in favor of a referendum to impose a 2 a.m. alcohol cutoff. The city is having challenges getting all of that sorted out, but they're hoping that for people who actually live down there, that, you know, a party scene that sometimes gets out of control will be curbed a little bit. There's been some characters, a cast of characters that have come to Miami Beach during the pandemic when things were closed down, just a little bit of mayhem, actually.
And the residents are a little tired of it.
And as everybody knows, if you take alcohol out of the equation, sometimes things are a little calmer.
Yeah. One of the surprising things with that is the Miami Beach is one of the biggest nightclub towns in the world. It's up there with Europe and some of the other places, Ibiza and some other places. So there are people that go out and start partying at 1 a.m. and they'll stay out till the sun comes up. So a 2 a.m. alcohol cutoff is a big statement. And the city of Miami Beach has got to figure out how to implement it. And there's lots of politics and drama with that. So that's interesting to follow. We follow it in the Miami Herald newspaper. So
yeah, and an update on Miami Beach is that they, you know, of course they want people coming and they want people to buy food and they want people to have a really good time. But, you know, the cities have to work against, you know, a bad element coming in and literally ruining it for everyone. Right. So they're kind of, you know, maybe I'm getting old, but 2 a.m. seems like a reasonable cutoff.
I mean, 2 a.m. is a very reasonable cutoff. We're in bed by 11 p.m.
Go back to your room and have a nightcap.
Yeah. Miami Beach is still a great place to visit. The last 2 years of spring break have been a little rough. They've had some shootings and some people that are causing trouble for the police. So, but generally there's other places to avoid for spring break. We'll talk about that next time we get closer to the spring break. But Miami Beach is still a wonderful place to be. I was down there last week on a business trip and it's still obviously a beautiful place and a great place to eat and lots of Michelin restaurants, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So for those of you that are traveling, perhaps flying, Americans leaving the United States, flying out on international flights, the Customs and Border Protection is implementing a cool new biometric reader that when you check in for your flight or at your gate, you won't even have a boarding pass. They just scan you. They scan your face. It matches what they've got with your passport photo on record, and that validates who you are. So it's basically a biometric login that makes the process a lot quicker. And I think they do the same thing coming back into the country. Tampa's implementing it now on a trial basis. Orlando will have it by January or February. Miami will have the biggest installation of it, and they'll be online next year. And it's supposed to be in place nationwide by 2024. Miami's a big international gateway. A lot of flights to Central and South America go through the Miami airport. And have you ever come back through customs through the Miami airport, it can be long, can be an hour or more wait, especially if you're trying to make another flight, make a connection. Typically, you would be, unless you live in Miami. So the fact these biometrics are put in place should ultimately shorten the lines for people that are coming back into the country. And if you have the chance to book an international flight and you can do the biometric technology, I've seen parts of it at the airport, I would recommend doing it. We will the next time we go abroad.
So be sure that your current passport in many cases, you won't be able to travel if your expiration date is within 6 months.
Correct. The cruise lines, people famous show up for cruises, think, oh, my passport doesn't expire for 90 days. And they may not let you. They probably will not let you go on the cruise. So don't mess around with your passport. Get your passport well in advance, too. If you end up having to do it at the last minute, it's more expensive to do one of the priority things. And lately, they've been taken, we're hearing 90 days from the State Department to get a passport. So if you're going to take a trip abroad, make life easier on yourself and get your passport, you know, a year in advance, probably by the time you get it, by the time you get, you know, you're within your 6 month window, and they give you your old one back. So we have a thing for passport stamps for countries that we've been in. So when you get your new passport, they give you your old one back with holes punched in it. So, but you don't lose your cool stamps and, you know, memories of trips abroad. So, a lot of people fly through Miami. So that's something that's, we thought was significant enough to discuss. Other travel tips. One of the things a lot of people don't know about is in the Gulf Coast and sometimes on the East Coast of Florida in the fall, in the October timeframe, we can get something kind of not so great called red tide, where it's basically like it's naturally occurring. It's a red algae that is kind of gross and it tends to kill a lot of fish. And so you get a lot of dead fish in the water and you can smell it. It's not very pleasant. It doesn't happen too often. It varies year to year. The year after Hurricane Irma, the year after, it was really bad. If you're coming in the fall, look online. We'll send a newsletter out about it if we hear about it, let people know. So if you want to sign up for our newsletter, that would be helpful if you want to do that. But, it moves around. It can be different parts of the state, but it would be something that would really not be good for your vacation. So if you're coming in October or so, just do a little homework ahead of time to find out if the area you've got has a red tide bloom going and you might want to change your plans.
I mean, you can, as I mentioned before, you can get from the East Coast of Florida to the West Coast of Florida in 3 hours. If for some reason you have travel plans that can't change as far as the airport that you're flying into, you can totally escape any red tide issues going to a beach that's a little north, a beach that's a little south, a beach that's on the Atlantic side. It's not a game over situation.
Yeah, correct. So if you knew, for example, there was red tide around St. Pete, which we had a bad case of 3 years ago or so, you could always go down to like Longboat Key or Sarasota, Bradenton, or somewhere further to the south down toward Naples and get away from it. It's rarely ever that large of a bloom, but it's not something you want to, it would ruin your beach day. And if you're coming to Florida to go to the beach, like most people, it would not be something that you would be happy about. So, but I mean, if you're flown in, you got a rental car, just change hotels. Just go to a different place.
It's kind of like going to La Jolla and smelling the seals while you eat lunch. So, yes. I mean, it's nature.
Which Heather did recently.
Yeah, it's nature.
Nature.
Yeah. Can't help it.
Good and bad.
Good and bad.
So today's episode, we're talking about our Florida panhandle coastal crawl. And one of the things I wanted to share is there's a book I got. We're travel geeks, obviously. That's why we're doing a podcast and all the content around it. I love travel books. Some of you maybe that have grown up on the internet generation, you know, it's easy to look things up online, but there's nothing like a good old fashioned travel book. And they've been, for years, there have been brands like Fodor's and Frommer's and Lonely Planet and Moon and other ones. There's about six or seven of them. You can get them all on Amazon. This book we used for this trip was absolutely just extremely valuable. It's called Florida Gulf Coast, written by a guy named Joshua Kinzer, and it's published by Moon Publishing, which is one of the travel book companies. Bought it on Amazon. I think it was $12. I'm going to put an affiliate link to an Amazon in the show notes. And if you want to buy the book, use that link. We get a little commission from it. It helps support our efforts to bring you content. But the book is just terrific. It covers everything from Naples all the way literally to Mobile over into Alabama all the way around. So I highly recommend that. And a lot of the tips and things that we found in that book. So I highly recommend that.
So normally we would go from Tampa to Pensacola and we would take Interstate 75. Essentially, you get on Interstate 75 North, you hang a left, and you get on 10 at Tallahassee, and then you just drive west. It's long and it's boring. It gets you where you need to go, but we decided we wanted to do something different. So we headed up on our Suncoast Parkway and went to see what we could see.
We drove up. So we are in the north end of Tampa. We're at the very beginning of what's called the Nature Coast. So Florida's different coasts that get named. So I think people think that the entire state of Florida's beaches all the way around, which it is for the most part, but there's a good bit of it that's just mangroves. The Keys are actually like that. There's a lot more mangrove areas and less beach in the Keys than I thought as well. But the Nature Coast is an area that's not, doesn't have sandy beaches. But what that does is it has left it in a much, much less developed, more unspoiled state where there's amazing places to go kayaking, play golf, hike, ride bikes. It's a very natural area, very unspoiled compared to, or underdeveloped compared to the rest of Florida. And that's the Nature Coast. So we started through there. Then you get onto the Forgotten Coast, and when you're there, you'll see why it's called the Forgotten Coast. Then you get to the Emerald Coast, which is a beautiful area around Fort Walton Beach, Destin, and that area. And that's the kind of the trip as we went up that way. But we really picked different spots to go to sort of sample. We'd never been up through the panhandle, through the edge, and decided to stay off the highway and just follow the local roads, 30 and 30A and 98 and different roads, and just went the back route through the whole panhandle. So it's called, if you're not familiar with the term, it's called a panhandle because it looks like the handle of a pan holding on to the rest of the state of Florida. So that's a common term for, you know, the, you'll hear that a lot in Florida speak is, we're in the panhandle or up on the panhandle. And so we were going to Pensacola to see some family. We thought, hey, let's take three days and just slow crawl or slow drive in our truck and just go around and see things. So we started, the first place we went is only about 2 hours from Tampa. And this place is a real gem. It's called Cedar Key. It's an island, and it is another planet.
There's probably about 900 people that actually live in Cedar Key. When you first get there, you actually think you might be walking into a Hallmark movie set. It's adorable. There's art galleries and little restaurants and a pier that you can walk out on that has great fishing, and it's set up specifically for fishing with lights at night. And we found a great restaurant. We had a good recommendation from the book about the hotel. We stayed at a place called
the Cedar Key Harbor Master Suites.
Thank you. That was a lot. I couldn't remember it all at once. Sorry about that. Sorry. And we ate at a place called Duncan's on the Gulf, and that had been recommended to us by the hotel. And we had a beautiful sunset, a great meal. Our server could not have been nicer. Her name was Donna. She was so great. I remembered her name. And we had a little wait for dinner, so they have a local, little local bar downstairs.
That's a local spot for sure.
Local bar, and probably
some regulars down there.
10 seats maybe in the bar. Had a nice little cocktail and then walked up the stairs when our table was ready and sat on a screen porch with a beautiful view of the Gulf, the sunset, and had a great meal.
Yeah, if you're looking for an off the beaten path, out of the way place, maybe you've been to a lot of places in Florida, you're looking for something different, Cedar Key is it. Especially if you're coming to, if you live in the Tampa area, or even Orlando, it's probably a 3 hour drive, probably. It's a great weekend spot. We're going to go back and spend at least one night there over a weekend and see some of the art exhibits and the art stores. It's just a funky little cool, slow town that when you get there, your blood pressure, your stress level just drops. It's just a neat place.
And remember too, it is slow. When we were meandering up the coastline, and that was our goal. We're taking our time. We didn't have a reservation that we needed to get to. We walked into the restaurant. We were willing to wait for a few minutes to get a table. Everyone is casual there. You are coming into their town. And that was just such a nice reprieve from the fast pace of everything that we're normally doing in our life.
Yeah, and there's several places that you can just stay overnight. We stayed in the Harbor Master Suites, which was a cool spot, and we were right over the water. In fact, the buildings, the Harbor Master Suite building, we'll have a YouTube video of it to show you. It's some really cool stuff. But the whole building complex and two or three restaurants is basically on a dock over the water.
Yeah.
So you're sleeping over the water, which some people might not care for. But there's some other places nearby that aren't. And a lot of it's, you know, it's not. Some places you go, like St. George Island, we went next, is more of a stay for the week kind of place. Cedar Key is just a place that's really easy just stay one night or stay for a weekend. It's a very, very cool place. And if you like to fish, there is a right near the Harbor Master area, near the fishing pier, you can rent a pole, buy bait, and just go fish right off the dock. We saw a guy catch a really nice flounder while we were there, a nice panfish. Apparently, that was probably, I bet that was pretty delicious, actually.
I bet it was.
Flounder's a good eating fish.
So the next morning, we looked around, looked in the book, asked for recommendations, and ate breakfast at a place called the Second Street Cafe, and it was on Second Street. So we walked over a bridge from the island of Cedar Key into the little town. There's just a little, what was it, maybe a quarter mile?
Yeah, if that.
Mm-hmm. Nice walk. Just had a delightful breakfast, super, super nice people in the cafe, met the owners. She gave us some great recommendations for the things that we might be wanting to see as we made our way up the coast.
Including in Perry.
Oh my gosh.
So one of the towns, so we left there. It was a fairly long drive over to the next civilization. I shouldn't say civilization because people live all the way through there. But our next spot we wanted to get to was an island called St. George Island. And that was about a four-hour drive. So a little bit of a trip. So we went through a town called Perry, and we had been told about a bakery, Johnson's.
Johnson's Bakery. And yeah. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, that says a lot.
I went in. We couldn't find it at first. It didn't even have a sign over the door. You know, we used Google Maps and we drove right by it. I'm like, wait, we passed
it.
We drove by it again. And so we finally parked and I just sort of ran back. And I mean, amazing prices, really nice people. I ran in and got a eclair for you and some kind of amazing cream filled powdered donut amazingness for me. And
if you're doing this trip, you got to go to Johnson's and get something.
It was
hard to say, oh, it's the best donuts ever, but it's one of those places.
They were really good.
Different. Well, the person that told us at the Second Street Cafe was true. Like, this was worth the stop.
It was worth the stop. And we had the box riding with us for probably 2 days. We took it into the hotel the next night and we ate some the next morning. And it was phenomenal. It was definitely worth the stop and worth the tremendous amount of gluten and sugar that I haven't eaten in like 2 years.
Heather's not supposed to have gluten, but she, though you're on vacation, sometimes you got to let your hair down.
Exactly. Exactly.
So from there, we went over and got over to St. George Island. So St. George Island is an island and it's a beautiful place. There's a pretty good distance to get down to it. It's really off the beaten path and it's a very cool island. And most of it, 90% of it is week-long rentals. They're rental homes. If you've ever been to the Outer Banks in North Carolina or other coastal areas in the U.S. or the world, you'll have rentals that are large places for a family for a week, whatever that the case is. And that's a large part of what St. George Island is. It's just an absolutely beautiful place. I took some video of the beach. We'll put that up on our YouTube channel. It'll be 4K Beach Walk St. George Island will be the name of the video. And we went into the lighthouse too there.
Well, what they've done with the lighthouse, the St. George Lighthouse has been moved. This is the fourth lighthouse that they've had. It's been moved way inland because it's been decommissioned. They have rebuilt it. I think this is the fourth time it's been rebuilt. They have taken probably close to 2/3 of the bricks that were from the original lighthouse, and it's no longer a working lighthouse. So they've made it so it's fairly accessible if you can go upstairs. They've created a beautiful staircase inside with heart pine wood. And then at the top, it's about 100, I think they said 100 steps.
Yeah, it's not that hard to climb.
It's not too hard. At the top, there's about a 10-foot ladder that you go up, and then you see the whole island. It's absolutely stunning. And remarkably, it's $5 a person to go up. The only limitation is that you can't carry a child up. So it has to be a child who can walk upstairs by themselves. That's really the only limitation. But there's a beautiful gift shop. There's a beautiful museum in the history of the Lightkeepers house.
Were key for navigational aids for many, many decades. But yeah, just, and it's a great view of the island because the island's a beautiful place. It's really out of the way. I mean, Cedar Key, you can get to for a weekend or even a day trip from Tampa or Orlando. But St. George Island is really off the beaten path. And it's definitely the kind of place that you would want, if you're looking for a place like, hey, I want to go someplace different, spend a week at the beach with the family. It's a great one. We're already thinking potentially about meeting some family and maybe doing a Thanksgiving week there one year.
One thing we did notice about the rentals and taking, observing the prices on some of them is that the summer is peak season on the Gulf Coast, but the prices for Thanksgiving didn't really change that much because it's still a beautiful time to go to any of the Gulf beaches, winter or summer.
Yeah, we in some parts of the country, you'll get a much cheaper rate in the off season. I think a place like St. George Island is so nice year round. It's a little less. It's more in the summer because that's peak vacation season. But to Heather's point, it's not that much less the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. Even January, it might be $700 a week less than it is in July, which surprised me, frankly, when I looked it up. I was expecting the prices to be really discounted. Now, we haven't yet bothered to call a rental company or two, which you can find online, and ask them, like, hey, what's the best deal out there? What's the best property price for the week? Which we'll probably do when we do a Thanksgiving or a Christmas trip over there.
Well, the fact that it's off the beaten path like it is, it was obvious that it was a place for families. There were ice cream shops and some restaurants, but it was not a hopping summer.
It's not Panama City.
It's not Panama City. And that's where we went next.
Kids on bikes. Yeah, we went from there to Panama City, which was quite the contrast.
It was quite the contrast. But I think depending on what you're looking for, you can find it at St. George Island or you can find it at Panama City, especially with children. I mean, St. George Island was kids riding bikes and walking to the beach and parents pulling wagons with overflowing with sand toys and things like that. Panama City was a lot of restaurants, a lot of mini golf, go-karts.
Well, we went to Apalachicola from St. George Island. So on the way to Panama City, we stopped in an awesome town called Apalachicola. Apalachicola, or the locals call it Appalach. So yeah, we're getting excited about different parts. It's easy to skip over a couple. But Apalachicola is that area. Normally is one of the biggest oyster harvesting areas in the country. I think 80 or 90% of the oysters in Florida come from the Apalachicola Bay area. And then and I think it's 10% of the whole country's supply of oysters comes from that area. Although when we went there to eat, we went to a terrific place called Station Raw Bar, which somebody had recommended, which is an old Gulf gas station that they converted into a raw bar, which is a fantastic place. And we had some of the best roasted oysters we've ever had. It was terrific. And the prices were very fair. Oysters have gotten, we had some raw oysters and some cooked ones. Cooked ones, we had some jalapeno
and bacon.
Bacon, and you had...
and then Rockefeller.
Yeah, Rockefeller, which is the classic.
Which was tremendous.
But we tried four or five of the different cooked ones. They were terrific. There's a great local brewery called Oyster City Brewing. They have a mango pale ale that you liked. Mm-hmm. You're not always a beer fan, but that's something that you had. And if you've never been to a place like that before, don't be afraid to ask for a beer sample. A good bartender is happy to give you a half-ounce pour just to taste it and see if you like it or not. You did a tasting of the mango pale ale and like that.
Yeah, it was
like
really good. Went beautifully with the oysters. And
other restaurants in the area, they had that beer on tap. Oyster City was pretty. There's another one called Great and Brewing that was good too. We had some of their beer as well. So if you're a beer geek, check those two out. So we left there, went to Panama City.
And then we went to
Panama City. Apalachicola has some very cool old historic towns. That's a place if you want to, again, off the beaten path, out of the way place. Apalachicola is a neat place. The locals call it Appalach, we found out. But we went from there to Panama City. Panama City is a big place. Panama City and a lot of the Gulf is the seasons, the summer is the high season. So a lot of places in Florida, the winter is the high season and the summer is the slow season. But the panhandle, because it's the beach of choice for most of the state of Georgia and Alabama and Tennessee and Mississippi. That's the summer is the high season. People bring their families. It's crowded, but it's a big place. And if you've got a family, smaller children, you're looking for a lot of fun things to do and a lot of beach to explore. It's a pretty great place. Mm-hmm. Putt-putt, and they've got water slides and just lots and lots of places to eat. You won't find like fancy places to eat there. It's all more family style. The whole place is just very well suited for families. The day that we were there, we didn't stay overnight at the beach. We stayed nearby. But the it was cloudy that day, and we got some video, some beach video, beach walk for Panama City Beach, and it was cloudy. And Heather made the point of, hey, you know, people need to see that the beach is still nice on a day when it's not sunny. It's not sunny every day in Florida.
I think it was terrific, too, for families. I mean, you still need sunscreen. You still need to be aware of that the sun comes through the clouds. But it's so much more enjoyable to have a day that it's overcast. And as we've mentioned before, one of my favorite tools to knowing when it's safe to be on the beach in the clouds, whether it's going to storm, is WeatherBug. And I, wherever we are, as we crawled up the coast, if we were on a beach, I would put that town in my WeatherBug, and it would give me alerts if lightning was within 10 miles.
And that's an app on your cell phone.
And that's an app on my cell phone. Yeah. And
the lightning is probably the best part about that, because that's what you're really worried about. And it will tell you how far. To your point.
Right. You
and
can be
sometimes
on.
Sometimes you don't know. Sometimes it's much further away than you think, and you're safer than you thought you were. And sometimes it's 2 miles away, the last hit, and you don't know that. You're like, yeah, we need to get off the beach.
Yeah. There are a lot of accidents that happen with lightning because people see, they think it's so far away. And sometimes it can be because the state is vast. I mean, you can see where we live in Tampa, if there's a storm over the Gulf, we're about 30 miles from the coast, right? We can see flashes of light. And if I check my WeatherBug living where we live, I can see that the last lightning was 30 miles away. So back to the cloudy day at the beach. Don't be afraid to be on the beach if it's cloudy. It doesn't necessarily mean it's unsafe.
Yeah, it's not as hot. I think it was 15 to 20 degrees cooler because the sun's not out.
It was beautiful.
Don't forget to wear sunscreen because you can still get burned. We saw a lot of people that were sunburned. So definitely take sunscreen with you. And a small tip, check the date on your sunscreen. If it's expired, it won't protect you as well. Throw it away. We actually cycle through ours and try to use ours up in order to make sure we're not using expired sunscreen ourselves.
We, every summer, I buy sunscreen and throw away the summer. I mean, it's just a point on my calendar, like, oh, we're going into the summer months again. I'm going to make sure we've used this up and get new. So
we stayed in a Marriott. We like to stay in Marriotts. They're always very predictable, very clean.
Well, Marriott bought Sheraton, or did Sheraton buy Marriott?
They merged.
Yeah, they merged.
So there's a lot of properties. If you're a business traveler, you tend to pick either Hilton or Marriott as your brand of choice and collect points and get free nights. We like Marriott's. That's what I stay when we usually stay when we travel. See, if there's a fun local funky place, we'll stay there. But sometimes the easier thing to do, like we tried to get in short notice, a room at Panama City, and there was nothing there. So we stayed about 3 miles away in a Marriott, which was fine. It's a town place suites. And it was fine.
Which is great. It, you know, clean, usually has breakfast. We met some great people sitting outside because it's a extended stay. Generally, you know, somebody was outside grilling. There was somebody outside just having a glass of wine. And we got a chance to just talk to people, which is a lot of fun to do. Find out where they're from. You know, why are they here? What are they doing? And we also got a great fireworks display, which was like so random.
One of the nearby towns, it was a Wednesday night, I think. It was like just one of the nearby towns had a fireworks show. Like, well, that's cool. Unexpected. So we asked the front desk. They said, yeah, that happens every Wednesday. We're like, well, obviously, because it just happened now. But that was a lot of fun. So from there, we left and continued heading over west. We left in the morning, and we ended up we drove through the 30A highway area. So off 98 is an area that's really a unique, beautiful area. It's actually, we found out, kind of a lifestyle, the 30A life, where you go through Seaside, and we went to Seaside and we ate at a place called Great Southern. What did you have? Do you remember what you had to eat?
What did I have to eat?
I know I had the fried green tomatoes, but they're very Southern, upscale. How would you describe Seaside?
Oh, I had shrimp and grits.
Yeah, shrimp and grits. Okay.
And
very Southern.
Yeah, very Southern.
It's called Southern Kitchen. Highly recommend it.
Highly recommend it. We actually went early. We went about 4:30 and early bird special, I guess. No. We went about 4:30, and by the time we had about a 10-minute wait, and by the time we left at about 5:45, there was a line out the door. It's very popular, and it's in a town square that's been blocked off for traffic. So it's all pedestrian traffic. There are f- food trucks, multiple food trucks. How many? Like 10.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Airstreams. So if you're familiar with the Airstream trailers.
They're permanently
trailers,
there, too.
Yeah, there was one that had crepes. There was one that had ice cream.
Grilled cheese.
Barbecue. Yeah, it was a grilled cheese one, barbecue. So you could eat there, too, and probably save a little bit of money. But the town of Seaside is the most planned community area I've ever seen.
And not knowing this, we're driving along, and you see families riding bikes and people pulling wagons. And I made the comment, oh, my gosh, this looks like it could be from the Truman Show. Dun, dun, dun. It turns out that actually is where the Truman Show, the movie The Truman Show with Jim Carrey, was filmed. And I need to go back and watch it.
Yeah, we have to watch the movie now because you probably haven't seen that movie in 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful town. My travel book said that some people perceive it as being overdeveloped or overplanned. We thought it was beautiful. It's idyllic. Like, it's just pastels, and it's just one of those just happy places. The property values were pretty high. It's a pretty expensive place to buy property, which is not unusual, we found, for that area. And then as we continued west, we went through Grayton Beach. We found out later from some family that lives in Nashville, Tennessee, that because Grayton Beach is basically a straight shot down Highway 65 south from Nashville, that it's very popular with the Nashville crowd, the Grayton Beach people. So we continued through there. Ended up over in the Destin-Fort Walton area and stayed at another Marriott over there near Eglin Air Force Base. Spent the night there. We weren't at the beach. The beach was another place hard to get a room on short notice. We like to kind of wing our travel sometimes, and it was interesting to see what was not available because the summer in that area, again, is the high season. So the rates are high. I think we paid with taxes just for the Marriott one night was almost $300, which was a little bit of an ouch.
Well, we had no choice. But then we start to go backwards and say, well, we had a really nice place to stay, and we got a breakfast, and
A good breakfast, too.
And a pool to swim in and, you know, take advantage of some of the amenities of a hotel that you're staying in if you're not in a rush.
And the next morning we got up and went to a very cool place, which is free, near Eglin Air Force Base, is the Air Force Armament Museum.
It was tremendous.
It was incredible. We were there for an hour and a half.
We could have been there all day.
We've got pictures of this. We'll put this up in a YouTube video as well. You could spend the whole day there. Basically, it's a museum of Air Force armament and aircraft. And they have like SR-71s, F-15s, F-16s, A-10 Warthogs. They had stuff inside, all kinds of aircraft and displays of different bits of history and different kinds of bombs and material that they had used in different conflicts. And it was really just a very nice place. The people there were super friendly, and it's free. And it's just a great spot. You drive by it and you see these aircraft all over the place. You're just like, wow, what's that? And you know, that's something I would definitely plan. If you've not been to that and you're in that area, I would definitely want to go to that.
I mean, it was a very, very warm day. I mean, beautiful, not a dark cloud in the sky, lots of white fluffy clouds, and the sun was hot. We spent a little bit of time outside, but there's a lot to do inside that would, you know, it's, I don't know how many planes are in there. I mean, it was crazy. You can walk up so close to things. Mm-hmm. So especially, I mean, I was amazed by it. But if you take, you know, children, it's a great thing for them to be able. You're practically able to walk under planes.
Yeah, it's a good history lesson there for why America's a free country still to this day. So then we got toward the end of the trip and spent some time in Destin and Fort Walton, which was probably our favorite part of the trip. The beach there is some of the best, maybe the best beach we've ever seen. The white sand, and we found out the white sand is actually Appalachian quartz.
Yes.
And has drifted down through the rivers and has spent thousands and thousands of years, you know, ending up in the beach. And at the beach, it's just spectacular. The Fort Walton area, most of the beachfront, there's areas where there's restaurants and things, but a lot of the beach area is actually state park or federal parks. And they're very popular, and it's very unspoiled. Although the day we were there, it was a weekday during one of the high parts of the year. And it was probably an hour's drive to get in to go to the beach. Mm-hmm. We were going to go shoot another beach video. But looking at the line was backed up onto the highway. And we're like, we're not going to sit here and spend an hour waiting to get into the park. And then who knows, there might not have even been parking.
I think that would be a place that I would definitely consider going on the off season and be able to get into that park and see how beautiful the beaches are. Because just the coastline that you could see was amazing.
We got some video from our truck on our GoPro of what the beach area looks just driving by. And it is breathtakingly
beautiful. You actually need sunglasses because you are almost snowblind. It is so white.
Yeah. And the nice thing too, that quartz sand, it doesn't get hot, so you don't burn your feet. On the east coast of Florida, the sand over there is different. It's from shells, and you have to wear some sort of foot protection to keep from burning your feet. Not that those beaches are still nice as well, but yeah, the whole area around there was just terrific. So we left there, and we headed over to Pensacola to stay with our family. While we were there, we ate at a restaurant called Angelina's. Heather, would you describe that for us?
Yeah, it was Gulf Italian. And I say that because it highlighted a lot of the Gulf seafood and integrated it into amazing Italian food.
Crawfish ravioli.
Crawfish ravioli, broiled swordfish over a jambalaya risotto.
That's what I had. It was ridiculous.
I mean, I never ordered chicken. Never order chicken on a menu. And I had chicken parmesan, and it was with homemade pasta. It was unbelievably good. And the owner is James Brashone, and I think I'm pronouncing that right. He is an instructor at ICE, the Institute of Culinary Education in New York. And he and his wife opened a restaurant in Pensacola, and it's fine dining for Pensacola. It's beautiful. It's in a beautiful building. The build out was just incredible. We had a beautiful meal. It was four of us, and great service. The food was phenomenal.
Good wine
and
list.
A good wine list.
Yeah, I would go there again in a heartbeat.
And one of the other fun things about James Brashone is that he is twice a CHOP champion. So if you're not familiar with the TV show on Food Network called Chopped, it's a competition. You open a basket, you cook what's in it, and you get, you know, chopped if you don't make a good meal. But he has won it twice.
And he's the only one who's has won it twice, right?
Yeah.
At least.
Yes.
Yes.
So
you actually applied to be on the show once.
Yeah, I did.
Heather's chef.
Yeah. And it was a great meal. I would totally go back. But Pensacola is right on the Gulf. They also have a great place. We did some seafood at home. We had picked up, one of the long-standing traditions in Pensacola is Joe Patty's Seafood. And the only way I can describe Joe Patty's is it's like the floor of the stock market meets a seafood market. You get a number,
yeah,
and somebody's
well.
Calling it out, and it's crowded, and it feels like miles of seafood.
The longest seafood counter.
It's the longest seafood counter I've ever seen. I want you to look it up and see how long it is. But everything from tuna and shrimp and every size shrimp and crab and squid.
It's almost overwhelming, actually. You walk in, you're like, do I want snapper? All the different kinds of crab. They had like raw frog legs.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I
things
forgot
like
about that.
Which is like not something I think I want to see ever again. but anyway, but we actually got some stone crab claws, which were excellent. We got
some tuna, which was sushi grade, and we just sliced that with some sushi rice. And
it was extremely fresh. It was some of the best sashimi. So if you have sushi without rice, it's called sashimi. But the tuna, we sliced it thin and had some
had
some ginger and some
we had beautiful shrimp.
And we got some, beautiful shrimp and just had a great
meal. One of the things about Joe Patty's is that they are getting their fish, their seafood, literally from their boats. When you walk up, it's on a wharf, and their boat.
It's a big one.
Their big, big boat.
It's got the riggers for
literally,
shrimp.
Literally docked right there.
Yeah.
And
it came off that boat that day or within that day, whatever.
Yeah, it was great. Very, so that was a super fun event to – it's an event, really. It seems like, I'm just going to the seafood market, but you have to go to Joe Patty's in Pensacola.
I highly recommend that. That's a local just institution. And they got a wine shop in there now, some other food things in there. We're able to buy, we need some pickled ginger for our sushi. We bought that there.
Right. And pretty much anything that you would need for seafood and preparing it. They have, crab oil, seasonings, lemons, potato. I mean, anything you want to go with your meal, they have it. It's a great place.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't talk about your crab boil, your low country boil it. Station, Raw Bar, how good that was.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was delicious. So what's in a low country boil?
It's usually shrimp, potatoes, sausage, sausage. Corn. And corn. Corn. Delicious. And it's all boiled together, and the seasoning, you know, kind of permeates the potatoes, and everything just tastes great together.
Yeah. Terrific.
Yeah.
So that was our trip, 3.5 days, 4 days, with some family visit there toward the end. But it was a real adventure. We'd been to Pensacola, but had never been to all those places along the coast. And if you're the kind of person that likes to get in your car and drive and see some cool places and see something new that's off the beaten path, that's definitely the way to do it. Just drive along the coast the whole way. I think the takeaway is that we would say Cedar Key would be an overnight or day trip or overnight or weekend place. Mm-hmm. St. George Island is a weekly rental. Panama City is a great place for a family vacation, just with lots, especially if you've got a lot of kids. And Fort Walton and Destin were just a little bit more upscale, I mean, the beaches are stunning. I think they're better than Clearwater, but that's like, I know it's heresy
to say that.
I know, it's crazy. But yeah, the beaches are just terrific. We went to the Crab Trap in Fort Walton Beach, which was really good, and had mm-hmm. oysters. And that was a big place that looked kind of touristy, but the service that we got in very easily, the service was great. The food was terrific. So sometimes even those places that look like big tourist traps can still have some pretty great food if the people in the back know what they're doing.
Well, and I think I mentioned on our last podcast, as far as looking at reviews, take a look at reviews on Yelp, the app on, you know, put the app on your phone for restaurant reviews, for business reviews, and see how something stacks up. Remember, too, it's an average. So if they have 5 stars across the board and then one person has a bad day and they put in a 1-star review, that's going to lower the review. So read the reviews. Don't just look at the stars, because you can miss a really great place. And also understand the vibe of where you're going. When we were in Cedar Key, it was low key. We knew we would maybe wait a little while for our dinner, but we had a great sunset to watch. We weren't in a hurry. The same thing when we went to, and that was a local place, a small local place in Cedar Key. When we were in, was it Destin? Fort Walton.
Trap was Fort Walton.
Fort Walton. Yeah. It was a much bigger place. It was the middle, it was late lunch, probably like 2 mm-hmm. or 3. Got seated right away. It was definitely, the food came out much more quickly, but it's a hopping place. That's what, the way they have to do business to get it. But we weren't rushed. We sat on the water.
We had a great view. That place has a phenomenal view of the sand.
But right there. Know the vibe of where you're going, and don't have an expectation of like speedy, you know, the whole idea is to experience.
Relax. Right, on vacation.
And get a feel for someplace different than where you live.
Yeah, in the Caribbean, in some places, there's something called island time, where basically everything's just slower, people are more relaxed, they take their time. I think in our daily lives, in our work lives, we're rushing and don't realize it. In a place like this, it's just a chance just to like slow down and breathe and just enjoy yourself and not get frustrated if your food doesn't come out in 5 minutes. So
the journey is the best part of getting to the destination.
And the journey on that trip was awesome too. If you'd like to drive around and explore, we highly recommend you take that trip and that book. The Florida Gulf Coast book is a huge piece of having a good trip.
And I am going to make you stop at some antique stores next time.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. We'll get something to bring home. So thanks for listening to this episode. Check out our YouTube channel, Florida Travel Fanatics, and our website, floridatravelfanatics.com. Next episode, we're going to talk about how to go to the Kennedy Space Center, or how to go to the Space Coast and see a rocket launch. We did this a few months back and saw the SpaceX Crew Dragon 1 launch at night, which was a night launch, which was really spectacular. That was the first manned Crew Dragon. That was the very first one. They've put 3 or 4 up since then. And there's a lot going on. There's a big launch coming up, and we'll talk about this in the next episode with the Artemis. This is the first test flight of the SLS Artemis moon mission, which is actually we're going to the moon ultimately, but this is an unmanned test of it. It's going to be a big rocket with a big blast off sometime in September, but we'll talk about where to go, where to watch it from, what the Kennedy Space Center is like, how to enjoy Cocoa Beach, which is one of my favorite areas on the East Coast, and we'll talk all about that next time.
Sounds great. We'll see you soon.